This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up over the next hour, we'll be looking back at all of the Premier League action from the weekend. Yet again, we can be talking about so much as we now head into an international break. It feels like a bit of an anti-climax that we've had a third international break already, but so much to talk about from the weekend's action. We'll also be talking about that showdown at Anfield, Liverpool 3, Manchester City 1. So much to talk about from that game at Anfield yesterday. Also talking about a number of managers who might be under pressure. Could Unai Emery be sacked over the next few days? We'll also talk a little bit about Newcastle later in the hour. Back-to-back wins, the first time since April that they've managed to do that. Is Steve Bruce starting to get on a little bit of a roll at Newcastle? Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp here on the Premier League Fan Show. So plenty to talk about over the next hour. That number again, 0208 7020 558, if you want to have your view this afternoon. As I said, we are into an international break now, but obviously so much to be talking about. We can look back at the first 12 games of the Premier League season knowing that we're not even a third of the way through the season. So still so much more to happen. And this season has been so intriguing for so many different reasons. Statistics like, outside of the top four, no club has won more than four games this season. Considering we're 12 games into the season, that's a pretty stunning statistic. Watford, it took them 12 games to get their first win. And finally, Watford fans can sit here on a Monday afternoon looking back at a winning weekend in the Premier League for the first time in a number of months. Has the top four already been decided? Are the top four, as it is at the moment, are they going to be the four sides to occupy those positions? 8 points between Manchester City in fourth and Sheffield United. What a job Chris Wilder's doing there. Sheffield United in fifth on 17 points. Remember, if you want to get in touch, call us on that number, 0208 7020 558, to have your voice heard here on the Premier League Fan Show. We'll go through all of the results, just a quick fire one, and then go on to the main talking points. On Friday night, it started at Carrow Road. Norwich 0, Watford 2. A bit of a surprise result, although producer Laurie did predict that, so he was rather happy about that. First win of the season for the visitors, so an important win for Kike Sanchez-Flores. He even admitted himself that potentially, if it didn't go well on Friday night, he could have been sitting here on Monday afternoon without a job. So a big win for the Hornets. Then on to Saturday's action. Frank Lampard's side made it 6 wins in a row in the Premier League. Chelsea 2, Crystal Palace 0. Tammy Abraham now into double figures of Premier League goals. Burnley 3, West Ham 0. Quite a predictable result, really, at Turf Moor. West Ham did not help themselves. In particular, Roberto Jimenez in the West Ham goal, gifting 2 goals, really, to Burnley. How much pressure is Manuel Pellegrini under? Newcastle 2, Bournemouth 1. As I mentioned, Newcastle back-to-back wins, the first time they've done that since April. They're now 7 points away from the relegation zone. Things looking a little bit different for Newcastle to where they were 3 or 4 weeks ago. A game on the South Coast with 2 managers under big pressure, Southampton against Everton. The Merseysiders came out on top. They won 2-1 away at Ralph Hasenhüttl's Southampton. At the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, VAR was at the centre of the debates. No surprises there. And it finished Tottenham 1, Sheffield United 1. Potentially Sheffield United unlucky not to get all 3 points. The final game on Saturday, Leicester 2, Arsenal 0. Goals from Jamie Vardy and James Maddison. Sees the Foxes strengthening their bid for a top four spot. They are 9 points ahead of Arsenal, who are the kind of the next big six, top six side outside of the top four. On to Sunday's action. Manchester United 3, Brighton 1. United up to 7th in the table, just 1 point behind Arsenal, but still 9 points off the top four. Wolves 2, Aston Villa 1. Another goal for Raul Jimenez, and things have turned around quite significantly for Wolves after a tough first five or six games. Things have gone swimmingly since. They are most definitely mixing a good Europa League run with a good Premier League run as well. And the final game, which is what we'll go on to talk about, Liverpool 3, Manchester City 1 at Anfield. Plenty of talking points from, obviously, that game at Anfield. It sees Liverpool 9 points clear now of Manchester City, who are now down into fourth, 8 points clear of both Leicester and Chelsea. Let's just have a look at some of the WhatsApps that we've been getting in before we talk about some of the talking points from the weekend. Charlie from Islington says, we need to give Emery a chance. Look at Spurs, look at Man United. We waited so long to get rid of Wenger. They're not going to do anything soon anyway. Danny from Catford says, I still think Liverpool will blow it. Can definitely see them losing to Palace after the international break. Sarah from Wembley Park says, I hate the big team bias in the media. We should just be talking about Sheffield United at the moment. What a manager Chris Wilder is. And Leo from Newham says, can't think of a time when so many managers were under pressure and not who we expected at the start of the season. Marco Silva, Manuel Pellegrini, Mauricio Pochettino, Unai Emery, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Ralf Hasenhüttl. Anyone could go. Who would have thought Steve Bruce wouldn't be in that group? There are a huge number of managers, and I think those would have been the list that I would have compiled, and I think there's a pretty good chance that by the time we get to Christmas, there's a good chance none of those managers will be in the current positions that they currently hold. So it will be very interesting to see how that unfolds. So obviously the big talking points, we can't not start at Anfield. Liverpool 3, Manchester City 1. Goals from Fabinho, Mohamed Salah and Sadio Mane gave Liverpool all 3 points. A consolation goal for Bernardo Silva late on for Manchester City. It sees Liverpool top of the table by 8 points ahead of Leicester and Chelsea. 9 points clear now of Manchester City. So much to talk about from the game. It all really hinges around Liverpool's first goal and what happened in the 22 seconds before that. So at one end, Manchester City were attacking the cop end inside the opening 6 minutes, and Bernardo Silva charges in. He hits it against Lovren. It hits Bernardo Silva's hand accidentally. It then goes towards Trent Alexander-Arnold, where it does hit his arm. Manchester City claim for a penalty. Liverpool then go down the other end, and 22 seconds later, it is Fabinho who scores a fantastic goal, a great strike from 25 yards out, giving Liverpool the lead. Now, Pep Guardiola and his coaching staff, as well as the Manchester City players, were incensed that a penalty hadn't been given. So, the question is, should it have been given a handball against Trent Alexander-Arnold? So, should City have had a penalty instead of Liverpool having a goal? Now, if we look at it, first and foremost, was it a handball by Trent Alexander-Arnold? Yes, it was a handball by Trent Alexander-Arnold. It wasn't a natural position. The PGMOL said that the fact that it deflected off another player meant that there is that mitigating circumstance. But I think most people would admit that Trent Alexander-Arnold's arm was out in a rather unnatural position, making him into a bigger silhouette, so he can effectively have a bigger way of impacting the direction of the ball. So in that sense, yes, it was a handball. However, I think what has been forgotten is that even though Bernardo Silva's handball was accidental, we've seen on numerous occasions this season, and the referees have made a big point of this, if you use your hand, whether it be deliberate or accidental, in order to create a goal-scoring opportunity, that's given a free kick. Now, Bernardo Silva by no means deliberately handled it, because it kind of deflected off Dejan Lovren into his arm, so it was not deliberate in any way. But if a penalty being given, that's a goal-scoring opportunity. So even though in one sense it should have been a penalty to City because of a handball for Trent Alexander-Arnold, before that moment there was a handball that would have led to a penalty, which is a goal-scoring opportunity. So in theory, and I think Bobby Madley had tweeted this before deleting it, I'm not sure why, that in theory then it should have been stopped dead as soon as the Bernardo Silva handball would happen. So it should have been a free kick to Liverpool, which would have meant that therefore Fabinho wouldn't have scored that goal in that way 22 seconds later. But there's no denying that Trent Alexander-Arnold's handball was a handball. But I think sometimes it is forgotten that maybe Bernardo Silva's, even though it was completely accidental, that would have led to a goal-scoring opportunity had a penalty been given. So perhaps a few mistakes there by Michael Oliver, who is seen by many as the best referee in the Premier League. So a big moment, obviously, there. What it was a phenomenal game of football between two of the best sides we've ever seen in Premier League history. The defending Premier League champions against the defending European champions. And the quality from start to finish was phenomenal. It wasn't one of those cagey affairs, a bit like the 0-0 at Anfield last season, where it was a cagey affair. And it didn't really live up to the expectation. This game most certainly did. It was full of quality. So many brilliant players on show. Two phenomenal teams that have a great amount of respect for each other because of the quality that both teams possess. I think going into the game, we spoke to Jonathan Higgins on Friday, I think it was, and I asked him what would be the key area that would determine the game. And his answer was the midfield, and that was definitely it. I mean, but there was a case to say that it was the ruthless streak. City had chances. Players like Sergio Aguero, one of the best Premier League strikers of all time, missed numerous chances, but Liverpool were cutthroat. They showed a cutting edge to take advantage of those chances. But it was Liverpool's midfield. Everyone talks about, and rightly so, Kevin De Bruyne is one of the best creative midfielders in world football. That you look at some of those players that they have, Bernardo Silva, they've got a team stacked full of talent. But Liverpool's midfield yesterday dominated the game. They were absolutely phenomenal. Fabinho in that holding midfield role, he's one of the best holding midfielders in world football at the moment. He's playing brilliant. The way that he just controls the game from holding midfield, he's exactly the type of player you want in there. Fernandinho, when he's been at his peak for Manchester City, that's what he does. It's what N'Golo Kante does for Chelsea. The ability to dictate play, constantly breaking it up, reading the game so well, and then the distribution from there. He was outstanding and a brilliant goal. Jorginho Wijnaldum and Jordan Henderson, the energy, the intensity that they brought to the game, they were absolutely brilliant. And they, even though City might have a more creative midfield, well, they do have a more creative midfield. It's not a might, that they do have a more creative midfield. Liverpool's midfield doesn't need to be as creative because of the creative impact that both Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andy Robertson have. 15 assists each since the start of last season. They offer the creativity. Liverpool's midfield needs to show that real bite, that real intensity, the energy, and that's exactly what they did. And I wanted to make a point of Jordan Henderson's assist for Sadio Mane's goal, the third. If that was Kevin De Bruyne, and rightly so, everyone would be waxing lyrical, talking about that for days. But because it's Jordan Henderson, I get the sense that people will just not mention it. It was a brilliant cross, absolutely phenomenal. And the way that Henderson's playing on that right-hand side, he's used to playing on the right wing, actually, when he broke through at Sunderland. So it's a position he's used to. And you've seen it against United at half-time, him going further out to the right. Against Aston Villa, it happened. He is making a real impact down that right-hand side. And Liverpool's midfield was absolutely fantastic. And just one final thing on that Liverpool-Manchester City game. City do have injuries, and that's... That is a difficult thing for a side like Manchester City to have to deal with, the absence of Aymeric Laporte yesterday, as well as Edison. Those are two brilliant players, two of the best players in their position in the Premier League. So inevitably, you're going to not be as good without those players. However, I struggle to have any sympathy for Manchester City at the back. And Gary Neville made this comment yesterday in commentary, and it was a really good point. Pep Guardiola cannot whinge about a lack of options, how his squad has been depleted, when he has a £50 million right-back that started yesterday, a £50 million centre-back, a £35 million centre-back on the bench, a £35 million full-back on the bench, and a £50 million full-back that wasn't even in the squad. How on earth can you complain? You've spent millions, hundreds of millions on defenders over the last 4 or 5 years, even going back before in terms of players who aren't there. The likes of Mangala, who they spent £35 million on. City have spent so much money on that back four, and it is still a mess. Yes, you take out Laporte, and for example, yes, obviously if you took out Van Dijk out of Liverpool, that would have a negative impact on Liverpool. But it would be nowhere near as much as we're seeing City with Laporte. You take Laporte out and suddenly, I mean, even with Laporte, City look a bit suspect defensively. So there cannot be any sympathy for Manchester City. Oh, how many injuries do they have at the back? Oh, it's so unfortunate. When you still had hundreds of millions of pounds on the pitch and on the bench for City in defence. I just don't get why you would have any sympathy for City in terms of their injury problems at the back. Yes, Laporte's a blow, but they've spent hundreds of millions of pounds on those defenders and they still are looking pretty bang average. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number, whether it be that showdown at Anfield or any of the other nine Premier League games. We'll be back after this.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 7020 558. We've talked about that showdown at Anfield, Liverpool 3, Manchester City 1, which means Liverpool have an 8-point gap at the top of the table, 9 points ahead of Manchester City. Looking through some of the other big games, Leicester 2, Arsenal 0. Is Unai Emery clinging on by a thread? Has he got the sword of Damocles hanging just over his head? We'll be talking about that later in the hour. Southampton 1, Everton 2. Are both managers still under huge pressure? Could Hasenhüttl leave? Could Marco Silva leave? Also, Burnley 3, West Ham 0. Are the Hammers fans starting to lose a little bit of patience with Manuel Pellegrini? As we were talking about just a few moments ago, a huge game at Anfield yesterday. Liverpool 3, Manchester City 1. So much to talk about it, from handballs to VAR to Liverpool's midfield to City's defensive issues. So much to talk about from that game. Earlier on The Breakfast Show with Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's, they were joined by the former Liverpool goalkeeper, Chris Kirkland, and he was giving his views on that big showdown at Anfield yesterday.
Well, to be fair, City started off really well. You know, they dominated early on. Put us under a lot of pressure. You know, we were sort of watching, thinking, well, they've come here with a, you know, usual City knocking the ball around as they normally do. But yeah, then we got the goal, which was a brilliant goal by Fabinho. Out of nothing, really. Come out to him. He doesn't get too many goals, but what a strike. And then, I mean, the second goal is just incredible. The switch of play from, we talk about the fullbacks. You know, the fullbacks we've got at Liverpool are a huge part of our play. Probably the most, you know, dynamic fullbacks in the league, probably in Europe. Trent switches it over to Robertson, and his ball to Salah, I mean, was just incredible. But the header from Salah as well was brilliant. And that was really then, you're thinking, you know, we're going to, you know, we shouldn't really lose this game from there now.
Yeah, it was incredible. I just saw a stat in terms of assists. I think they're number 2 and 3, I believe, over the last year or so. It's fantastic. Before the game, Klopp spoke about everybody turning up. And that wasn't just the players. It was everybody, the fans. He wanted everyone to be on their game for this particular game. Obviously, you were there. What was the atmosphere like? The fans, you know, it's the cliche about them being the 12th man, but I get the impression they were yesterday.
Oh, they always are, Rich. You know, I mean, you've played at Anfield before. It's an intimidating place, and now the Jurgen's brought that good factor back. It's been bubbling, as I've said, for a couple of years now under him. He's got everyone back on board. You know, he brings everyone together, not just the fans, but I mean people down at Melwood. He knows everybody. You know, everybody. He speaks and treats everybody the same, no matter who you are, whether it's somebody taking the bins out or in the kitchen or whatever. He's just bought that. He's just got the whole club buzzing again, and you can feel that on. When it comes to Anfield match days and the atmosphere yesterday, I mean, you know, You Never Walk Alone was one of the loud. The only time I've heard it louder was the Barcelona game last year. But yeah, I mean, listen, they've put themselves in a great position, but there is a long way to go. But it's going to take, you know, you look at it now, Man City are going to have to go some. Can you see Liverpool losing 4 games? They're unbeaten now in, 13, 14 games. It's going to take some doing now, but there's still a long way to go.
Yeah, okay, well, look, we've got to talk. We've managed to go, 3 minutes into this interview without using the infamous three letters VAR. So let's do that now. What did you make of these two potential handballs that could have been given against Trent Alexander-Arnold, weren't? Pep Guardiola clearly not happy about it.
No, he wasn't happy. The first one, the first one, the VAR... When we scored the goal, when Fabinho scored the goal, obviously you're thinking, I mean, it's just taking the excitement out of football.
He didn't celebrate, did he?
No, that's exactly it. The first thing they do is look at the ref, look at the fourth official, look at the linesman's now. And so do the fans. I did it when he scored. I was looking straight away thinking, are they going to pull this back? Are they going to VAR? It's just taking the excitement out of football. Yes, it's getting decisions right, but it's just, it's not letting football flow anymore, and it's taking the excitement out of it. The first one, I mean, it's hit. Is it Silva's hand first? It's not. That's not deliberate. Trent, is his hands in a... I don't think they are. What's he meant to do there? Took him behind his bum. You know, you'll see some given one way, others not. But, I mean, that VAR, this, before it came up green, it was given and everyone knew it was going to be a goal. And then about 30 seconds later, VAR check comes over saying no penalty. So it's just, I think they're not helping themselves with the way they're running it at the minute. And I'd like to see it go to most.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, because that's what I was going to ask, to be honest with you. Where do you stand on it? But it just seems as though it is a really imperfect system. We spoke about it earlier on, about how the way that they adjudicate for offsides and things, you can quite easily manipulate that, just depending on from which angle you decide to look at it from, etc. So it is imperfect. Is there a fear, maybe, among some clubs or some professionals that VAR could end up seriously costing them something important, whether it's those at the bottom of the table that, you know, managers will get the sack or the club itself might go down, or, let's be honest, right at the top of the table where, you know, Pep Guardiola, from his perspective, clearly he'll be absolutely fuming over this and thinking that it might have cost them the title. So do you think that, is there that feeling among a lot of professionals at the minute?
Yes, I mean, obviously speaking from an ex-professional, but you're looking at before we had VAR, and, you know, There was calls for it, and there were certain goals that went in. You're saying, well, that wouldn't have been given it. But, I mean, I think it was the Sheffield United one, was it, against Spurs at the weekend. When there's something that close, I think that, you know, when, because I still couldn't tell with that one. What were they talking, like a shoulder blade or something like that? I think it's just getting too, they're trying to be too perfect with it now. I think for them type of goals where you're still 50-50, you've got to give the benefit of the doubt and give the goal. But they've got a lot of work to do. I mean, you look at the rugby have got it nailed on. I mean, there's within 20, 30 seconds it's done. Was that 3.5, 4 minutes at the weekend, one of them, that took so long to sort out? It's just, that's what I mean, it's just killing the game. But the biggest thing for me is, as I say, when a goal goes in now, instead of going absolutely mental, people are looking at, you know, the ref, the linesman, or, you know, players are not celebrating, and it's just taking the excitement and the fun out of the game for me.
No, I do have to agree with you on that. Can't have you on and not talk a bit of goalkeeping. Obviously, the game yesterday, I want to touch on Bravo, because I felt him come into that game. Ends up getting a bit of stick in the game, harshly, in my opinion. I know you're very much part of the goalkeepers' union. Interesting to get your take on that. There's a couple of other parts to this as well, though, because we've seen it at West Ham. Fabianski out, Roberto's come in. They've struggled hugely, and he's had a bit of a tough time himself. However, it then goes back to Liverpool, when Adrian's had to step in, and the fact they won every single game, if anything, it's made me, and certainly the amount of credit I have to give him based on what he's done over the period of time, stepping in for someone like Alisson, which is never easy, it actually makes his achievement even better, looking at how, say, Bravo's done and how Roberto's done. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, spot on, mate. And listen, he didn't have a pre-season. We spoke about it. He didn't have a pre-season. He come in cold. You know, I think he'd done a bit of training here and there, but he's come in and basically been thrown in straight away. A lot of credit goes to John Akterberg and the goalkeeper coach. He coaches at Liverpool. Particularly John, they got him up to speed quick. I was down there for a couple of sessions watching him, and, you know, he looks as though he's not been out of action at all. And you're right, he stepped in. But you know what it's like, the first game's always the most important one. Or the first couple of games, you've got to hit the ground running. And he certainly did that, and the fans took to him quick. And now they know, you know, hopefully Alisson doesn't get another injury, because you've seen yesterday again what he brings to the team. You know, he's just so calm on the ball. He deals with everything. He's a fantastic keeper. But if, God forsake, he did get injured, then yes, we have got a great backup. Bravo yesterday, you know, I think the only one I'd put him down for is probably the third one. I think he probably could have come and took the cross. And then obviously the header at the back post. I think he'd be a little bit if that was me. I always look at it from my point of view. I think you'd do the same, Rich. Mm. I think he'd be a little bit disappointed with that. But listen, he was under huge pressure. And as soon as they found out that, you know, Edison wasn't playing, then I think you see the gulf now between Edison and the net. You know, Bravo's a good keeper, but Edison's a class above.
Yeah, absolutely. Just talk to me a little bit about how the lads were prepared mentally by Jurgen Klopp for, you know, what was being kind of bracketed as this title six-pointer type thing. And also just what was the reaction in the immediate aftermath? How excited were the lads after the game?
There would have been in the dressing room, but the one thing Jurgen would have been saying to him is next game, Crystal Palace away. You know, there's internationals now. Obviously, that's a very nervy time for managers, for players. You know, hoping the players come back first and foremost fit and then not too tired, because, you know, we all know the distances of travel now. But he'll be focused on the next game, Crystal Palace away, which will be, we know Selhurst Park's a very tough place to go. Yes, we won yesterday, but it's all about the next game. You know, the next game's the most important one. I mean, you look at the fixtures we play every midweek, you know, Saturday, Tuesday, Sunday, Wednesday, for the, right up until Christmas, I think now, with obviously the World Club football as well. So they'll get the preparation right off the pitch. But, you know, Jürgen this morning, he'll be thinking about the next game. First of all, he'll be thinking about a break, I would have thought. He'll be going away somewhere for a few days. But and then the focus will turn on to Crystal Palace. He won't let the players get ahead of themselves, but the players won't do that either. You know, they, going back to last year, they were you know, 7-8 points ahead at one point, could have gone 10 points ahead. So they'll know that this is far from over, but they'll know they've put themselves in a brilliant position. Enjoy it, and every right to do that as well, but focus on the next game.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. There was a pretty big game on Saturday afternoon at the King Power. It was Leicester against Arsenal, and the home side won by 2-0. The pressure ramps up again on Unai Emery. To get the Arsenal perspective now, I'm delighted to say we are joined by Harry Simeu from the Chronicles of a Gunner podcast. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Harry. So that's a 2-0 loss for Arsenal at the weekend, but was it kind of inevitable? Was it? It wasn't really surprising that Leicester got all 3 points on Saturday.
No, it wasn't surprising at all. I don't think there was an Arsenal fan out there who was genuinely confident of us going there and getting something. And that's, you know, partly because Leicester are a really good side and they've been in incredible form this season. But it's mostly down to the lack of confidence that the Arsenal fans have in the team at the moment. You know, from week to week, we're seeing different systems. We're seeing different personnel. We can't quite work out what it is that Unai Emery is trying to achieve. It appears that the sort of high-pressing game that he brought in when he first arrived at the Emirates Stadium has disappeared by the wayside. We don't know what's going on anymore. There's clearly issues between him and certain players. And for me, it's got to a point now where it's time to just cut our losses and move on, because I don't see it getting any better, if I'm honest.
When you read some of the reports in the papers today on the back of the Times, Emery clings on at Arsenal for now. How worrying is a headline like that, that he is just seemingly clinging on to life and not really with any sense of confidence in the manager? Does that, why is it that Arsenal still feel that he's the right man but are still kind of flirting with the idea of sacking him? Surely you either back your manager completely and you're going to give him until the end of the season, or you don't and you make that decision now.
Well, there was a report from David Ornstein that came out on Sunday, which was you know, he said that it was unlikely that he was going to get sacked and the board were at the moment not even considering it. So that's worrying from an Arsenal fans perspective, because there was this whole thing in the summer, wasn't there, about the We Care For You campaign and, you know, people describing their sort of concerns around the way the club was being run. And Josh Kroenke, to his credit, responded to that. He came out, he spoke about it. And we thought and we hoped that, you know, there'd be a little bit more pressure on whoever's in the managerial hot seat. But it appears that isn't the case. Now, that's what we're led to believe. But, you know, you don't really know what's going on behind the scenes. How many times have we seen a club say, you know, we're backing our manager, and then a week later he's been sacked? So I wouldn't necessarily take that as gospel at this stage. And I think that, you know, I guess as a fan, I want to believe that the club are considering his position at the moment. Because let's be straight about this. This is not something that's happened in the last 3 or 4 weeks. You know, there's been doubts about Unai Emery from sort of April of last season, when things, in my opinion, took a really bad turn. And, you know, we needed, I think, 1 point from our last few games to get in the top four, and we missed out. And then we got battered in the Europa League final. So, you know, it's been going this way for a while. And I guess it was probably fair to give him the first sort of 10 games of this season to see if he could get things back on track. But he's obviously not managing it. There's been incidents left, right and centre with certain players. You know, he's not backed Xhaka in the whole thing. And whether you think he's a good enough player or not, if you make him your captain, then you expect the manager to show him some backing. He hasn't. He's had a constant thing going on with Mesut Ozil. You know, there's Lucas Torreira's now unhappy. And it just feels like there's just a really, really bad atmosphere at Arsenal Football Club. And at least with Arsene Wenger, you know, and I'm not saying that I want him back or anything like that, but at least with him, there was a respect between him and the players. And I don't think that there is a respect between the squad at the moment and Unai Emery, in which case, how can he possibly get the max out of him?
Having spoken to you, Harry, on a few occasions over the last few weeks, you've said you feel it's time to make a change. If Arsenal are to move on from Unai Emery, there have been plenty of names, as per usual, banded around, from Jose Mourinho to Max Allegri to former players like Mikel Arteta and Patrick Vieira. If it were up to you, if you were in charge of changing manager, who would you be looking to replace Unai Emery with?
I think I'd be looking at somebody like Allegri now, somebody who's done it, somebody who knows, has a set way of playing in their mind. You know, we wanted someone a little bit more pragmatic. That was our issue with Arsene Wenger. You know, we'd go to teams and we'd get rolled over and opened up because we weren't defensively sound enough. We thought we were getting that in Emery. I think in his mind, he thinks he's pragmatic, but our defensive record has gotten worse. I think this is our worst start to a Premier League campaign in over 30 years, or a top flight campaign, I should say. So that's really worrying. Allegri, for me, will probably be the standout choice, and people are going to say, oh, but, you know, he's going to come there and want money. Well, now it's time for the board to put their money where their mouth is, because we keep hearing about Arsenal making profit. We keep hearing about how brilliantly run this business is, yet we're not seeing the return. So for me, it would be Max Allegri. If, you know, you couldn't get a top manager at this point, given that we're sort of approaching Christmas and things like that, then I would probably just give it to Freddie Ljungberg for the time being. And I know people will say he's not experienced, and I completely get that. But similar to the Manchester United situation last year when Mourinho was given the bullet, you just need that change initially. Now, I'm not saying that if Ljungberg was to get the job, he should be given it on a permanent basis if he gets some good results for a couple of months like United did with Solskjaer. But, you know, I think that any change would give us at least a temporary uplift, and we're in desperate need of that at the moment, because we're 9 points off of Leicester, 9 points off of Chelsea, and the top four, you know, is looking further and further away.
One thing that was evident, Harry, on Saturday, and it was perhaps made more visible, really, was Tony Adams was on the Sky coverage on Saturday covering the game. And one of the things that I thought of was, even though he might be an eccentric character, he talks so passionately about the game. He loves the game and talks really well in an analytical way. I think a person like him, not necessarily on a full-time basis, but coming in some sort of a capacity, will send a rocket up some of the backsides. You think of him back in his Arsenal days, how much Arsenal could do with someone like him. How big do you think it could be for whether Unai Emery or another Arsenal manager to bring in a few of these guys, even if it is on a short-term basis or an occasional basis, getting players like Tony Adams back at the club to impart some of the experiences that they've learned from? Because Tony Adams is one of the kind of best Arsenal defenders they've had in absolutely ages.
I think he is the best we've probably ever had. And, you know, the problem is that I would like to see these people in and around the club. And, you know, it's been pretty evident over the last few years that, you know, a lot of them have been a bit bitter about not being involved in the club. And maybe that was partly down to Arsene Wenger. Maybe he didn't sort of want them around. I don't know what the reasons are. I couldn't tell you. But I totally get where you're coming from, and I'd like to see these players in and around the setup. But I think the issue you've got is somebody like Tony Adams is very old school, and I think the game has progressed a lot since then. And I think it's easy for us to sit there and listen to certain things that he says, and us that remember him in his glory days, and we think, yeah, you know what, you make a good point. But the game has evolved so much, and it's not just about, it's about defending, but obviously there are different phases of play. There are ways that your team needs to progress up the field. And I think there'll be a clash of ideologies. I guess that's the point I'm trying to make, between maybe what Unai Emery is trying to do and what some of these older school players would do. And, you know, I'd love to see him because I absolutely adore Tony Adams. But I think that clash of ideologies will stop people like Unai Emery and sort of the modern day coaches turning to these sort of legends, you know, in a desperate attempt to try and get them to help out.
One man that wasn't involved on Saturday's game was Granit Xhaka. Obviously, he's had the captaincy removed from him. Unai Emery said he didn't know whether Xhaka would ever play another game for Arsenal. He's been linked with a number of clubs in the January transfer window. In your view, Harry, do you think Granit Xhaka will ever play another game for Arsenal?
I don't know. I think he's going to be gone. Which, you know, in the grand scheme of things, Granit Xhaka is not good enough for Arsenal. He's not. I think most people would agree with that. However, when you look at our alternatives at the moment, he warrants a place in that starting 11, and nobody's going to convince me otherwise. I've been doing a lot of sort of research over the last couple of weeks. I've been writing quite a few articles on the matter, and one of the things I found about Granit Xhaka, when you look at the heat maps and you look at the statistics, is Granit Xhaka, although he may not be a natural defender, he does stick to his position. The majority of his time is spent in the area in which he's deployed, and that's in stark contrast to the likes of Matteo Guendouzi and Lucas Torreira, who seem to be chasing balls all over the field. And I think that's why Granit Xhaka was always selected in the team, because of his positional discipline. Yeah, he's indisciplined in other areas, in his temper and in some of the challenges he makes. But in terms of positionally, he was doing exactly what the manager was asking of him. And which makes it even more mystifying why in this whole situation, he has not been backed in the slightest by Unai Emery. It drives me mad to think that you made him the captain and then you've just completely thrown him under the bus. And from what I understand and from the reports that we're reading from people very close to the club, it appears that the rest of the squad feel that way as well. They feel as though Granit Xhaka has been thrown under a bus. And at this moment in time, you know, he's being left out. He didn't feature again on Saturday. But in my opinion, our midfield looks even more imbalanced and looks even worse. So I don't understand why this hasn't just been dealt with, moved on from, brushed under the carpet, get him back in the side sooner rather than later. And let's just get on with it until we can sell him.
As a result of Saturday's defeat, Harry, Arsenal are now 8 points off fourth. They're 9 points off the likes of Leicester and Chelsea. Do you think top four is now not an option? It is not available to Arsenal through the Premier League. Obviously, it could be available through the Europa League. If the top four is beyond them now, where do they go from here? Because it looks like it could be another season, next season, without Champions League yet again.
Yeah, and that would be a huge blow, given sort of the business we've done in the summer. It was all about getting back in the Champions League. So if we were to miss out, then for me, Unai Emery has to go, because, you know, Raul and Co have been quite vocal in saying that they believe that he has the equipment now and the personnel to go on and achieve Champions League qualification. But it's not impossible. And the reason I say that is because, you know, I expect Leicester to have a bit of a blip at some point. I expect Chelsea to have a bit of a blip as well. You know, they've got a very young, inexperienced squad and things are going very well at the moment, but there will be difficult times during this season. I truly believe that. But it's whether Arsenal can put the run together to capitalise on those slip-ups. And at this moment in time, it's very difficult to sit here, even as an Arsenal fan, and say that I believe we can win five or six games back-to-back and get ourselves right back up there. And, you know, for me, it's possible if we make a change. Just that temporary uplift that I spoke about earlier would be huge. But right now, if we're going to continue the way we're going, I think we're drawing too many games. We go into too many games looking not to get beat. And then we don't have the ability to switch it up. And when you consider we've got last season's Golden Boot winner, Alexander Lacazette, Mesut Ozil, a £72 million winger in Nicola Pepe, it drives me absolutely mad when I see Arsenal go to certain grounds and play this defensive, negative and boring football.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Harry. That was Harry Simeu from the Chronicles of a Gooner podcast. Arsenal losing 2-0 at Leicester. I think it was a fairly predictable result, which is perhaps the most concerning things for Arsenal fans. I mentioned Unai Emery is clinging on to Arsenal for now. It does seem like that sort of Damocles is just hovering above him, waiting to take him out. And I know that Harry is not Unai Emery's biggest fan. He believes he should be gone. And for him, he would be looking at Allegri. Plenty of names have been linked. Mourinho, Vieira, Arteta, Allegri. Arsenal fans out there, who would you want? If Emery isn't the right man, if he needs to go, which one of those names or another name apart from that would be your choice? Call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. One team that did win on the weekend was Newcastle. Back-to-back wins for the Magpies for the first time this season at home against Bournemouth. We'll be talking all things Newcastle next.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to share your views on your Premier League club, are you happy or are you absolutely distraught with your weekend's action? Call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We're also on WhatsApp. Obviously, we head now into the international break. Liverpool top on 34 points. Leicester in second on 26. Chelsea in third on 26. And Manchester City in fourth on 25. An 8-point gap then to Sheffield United. What a job Chris Wilder is doing at Sheffield United. They are fifth at the bottom. Norwich bottom on 7 points. Southampton second bottom on 8. Watford also on 8 points. Aston Villa just hovering above the relegation zone on 11. West Ham have their fortune has completely changed from the first six games to these last six games. We're going to be talking a little bit about Newcastle now. They won 2-1 at home against Bournemouth on the weekend. Goals from Kieran Clarke and DeAndre Yedlin gave Steve Bruce's side all 3 points. And to give us the Newcastle perspective now, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Aaron Stokes from the Daily Star. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Aaron. As I said, back-to-back wins for Newcastle, the first time this season, the first time since April. Does it just feel like a little bit of momentum is gaining? And if they can put together a little run, last season there were some wins when Newcastle were in a tough patch, and then it kind of was that inconsistent, patchy type of form. If Newcastle can just build on this, these back-to-back wins, it feels like talk of relegation will be a distant memory.
Yeah, I think you're completely right. I think the main thing is that if Newcastle are going to escape relegation this season, they need to be putting together sort of little runs of form, which they haven't really done over years. As you say, the first time since April that they've won back-to-back. And obviously, the start of the season hasn't been too bad, you know, beating Spurs, beating Manchester United, but what came after that has been defeats or draws, and there just hasn't been able to, you know, there hasn't been any momentum. So obviously Newcastle fans are hoping that, you know, after the international break they can go to Villa, you know, add to this great run that they're currently on. But because it's Newcastle, I don't think anybody is actually certain that that is going to happen. But if Newcastle are going to stay up this season, then they need to just make sure that these wins aren't just flashing the pans and, you know, once every four games. There needs to be sort of something to build on, which hopefully Steve Bruce can master.
Is Newcastle's aim this season, Aaron, simply to stay up, to stay in the Premier League and stay with relegation? Or do you think it's a case of you see where you are at Christmas, and if Newcastle can get a little bit of momentum, I was saying in the break to producer Laurie that if Newcastle can potentially extend the unbeaten run to three or four games, win a couple, draw a couple, then relegation will be a distant memory, and then they can start looking up the table ahead of them rather than over their shoulders. Is it a case of just a game-by-game basis, see where they are at the new year, and from there you say, is it just a case of staying up, or is it a case of actually trying to push on?
I think it's definitely a game-by-game basis. You know, as we've already touched on, so far this season there hasn't really been much momentum, so we're all sort of still wary that after the international break, you know, we could go to Aston Villa and get beaten if we're straight back in the same position again. So I don't think anybody as of yet is getting too carried away to say that anything above relegation is the aim. You know, the plan still is, you know, they've just got to make sure they avoid relegation. You know, other teams that were, you know, talked about being down there at the start of the season, Sheffield United, Brighton, teams like that are performing so well that really now that the aim needs to be just making sure that they're outside the bottom three come the end of the season. It's positive, obviously, that Bruce has, you know, managed to get a couple of wins under his belt. The form at the minute is fantastic. Nobody can disagree with that. But I think fans know that realistically, despite how well the team is playing, I think the aim has to be just to avoid relegation this season.
One theme for Newcastle this season has been the number of goals being scored by defenders. At the weekend, it was Kieran Clarke and DeAndre Yedlin. It's up to 8 goals for defenders. How do you view that, Aaron? Do you see it on the one hand as the fact that so many different players are contributing, goals are coming from different areas, and that's a good thing? Or do you look at it and think, in particular, that front three of Joelinton, Saint-Maximin and Almiron are not contributing goals, that this is a slightly worrying sign?
I think it's a bit of a blessing and a curse, you know. Obviously, Newcastle fans want goals to come from all over the pitch, but they don't just want them to come from the defence. So while it's brilliant that Kieran Clarke and Fabian Schär and Jamal Lascelles are chipping in with goals, they can't be the only ones to sort of carry the buck. So I think while it's good that they're getting in the right places, they're scoring, where Bruce has clearly got them performing quite well on set pieces, which is something Newcastle have famously not done too well on. But at the same time, Almiron and Saint-Maximin not scoring is very worrying. Joelinton hasn't scored since Spurs. So there's a sort of feeling that while it's good at the minute, it can't carry on. You know, there comes a time where Joelinton, Saint-Maximin, you know, Shelby, Almiron are going to have to start, you know, chipping in with more goals. Because, I mean, I don't think Newcastle are going to survive relegation if Kieran Clarke or that is their top scorer. So it's a positive and a negative, you know. I can't really grumble at the defender scoring, but it is getting to the point now where Balmer and Saint-Maximin are are started looking like they're cursed. You know, it's looking like they're never going to be able to hit the back of the net, unfortunately.
You mentioned Alan Saint-Maximin's name there. He is struggling, as is the likes of Al Moran and Joe Linton, to score goals. But you look at the performances of someone like Alan Saint-Maximin. It was a quiet start and it wasn't helped by a few injuries. But I've looked at his performance over the last couple of weeks and think, yes, the goals aren't there and necessarily the numbers there to back it up. But actually, performance-wise, someone like Alan Saint-Maximin has actually been playing quite well. Against West Ham, if he could actually shoot, he would have scored probably twice in that first half. Performance-wise, though, he's actually doing a reasonable job and is slowly improving.
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, I've just spoken about him in quite a negative light there, obviously not getting the goals, but his start to life in Newcastle has been very, very positive, you know. There hasn't really been a player at Newcastle since probably Hatton Ben Arfa where fans have, you know, there's a real expectation when he gets on the ball, his ability to take on players, you know, his drive, his link-up play. So it's so exciting because he's so young, he's so fresh. If he can add goals to his game, one, he's going to be dangerous himself, and I think he could really work well with Almiron Jolinton. And it's not just that, you know, he's been fantastic off the pitch. You know, he's only 22. You know, he's doing stuff with the food bank. He's interacting with fans on social media. So it's a bit unusual, really, because when he came in, a lot of people who've watched him in fans say, you know, he's a bit temperamental. He's not, you know, best professional in training and stuff like that. But so far, so good. And like I say, while he hasn't scored, he's been so good in every area. And Newcastle fans are really, really excited about him so far.
So as we head into this international break after 12 games, Newcastle 7 points above the relegation zone. And considering that Newcastle played a lot of good sides so far, they've played most of the big sides in the Premier League. Is there a feeling that over this busy fixture period, over the festive period, that actually Newcastle can really work their way up the table?
Yeah, I think fans are slowly, well, they're still sort of, you know, realising that they can't get too carried away. I think there is slowly starting to be a belief that this season isn't going to be as bad as what fans, you know, predicted at the start of the season when Benitez was replaced with Bruce. Obviously, if they can build on the last couple of games, you know, they've obviously got Villa next, which is, on paper, a game you'd really be hoping to try and get something from. You can obviously rule out Man City after that, but the Christmas fixture period isn't too bad, you know. So I think if they can go into the new year around the same place on the table, then, as you touched on earlier, they can sort of reassess the season at new year. But I think fans are a lot more positive at the start of the season because, you know, everything was at a very low ebb when Benitez left. So it's just good that Bruce has obviously managed to come in and actually sort of win over some section of the fans already.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Aaron. That was Aaron Stokes from the Daily Star talking all things Newcastle. And it does feel like the environment, the atmosphere at Newcastle has changed slightly, that maybe Newcastle fans still pining for Rafa Benitez, but there is a very different feeling towards Steve Bruce now than maybe there was a couple of months ago. And for Newcastle, those results have put them 7 points above the relegation zone. They've played a lot of the good sides, the top sides in the Premier League. So can they get a little bit of momentum? Because by Christmas, in theory, if Newcastle just have an okay run over the next month or so, then relegation talk will be very much a distant memory for all involved at Newcastle. So a good result for them. 2-1 win at home against Eddie Howe's Bournemouth. Back-to-back wins for Steve Bruce's side. The first time that Newcastle have done that since April earlier this year, and they were under a different manager at that point.
This is Love Sport.